A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 179. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of the Jensen Code. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, the Jensen Code, another classic slice of 1970s children's adventure television with some science fiction thrown in. Produced by ATV for the ITV network. Interesting show for us to talk about.
Yes, absolutely. Ran for 13 episodes as one long story, 25-minute episodes, in 1973. And we'll carry on a little bit further with the story than we did last time. Terry, our teenage hero, has undercovered some strange goings-on near the Clearwell Caves. And we start to get a little more into the plot of what's going on here, and into some minor spoilers, we'll say, for this one. So Dr. Jensen and his code, we learn, are key to a new spacecraft that's being launched and is being used as part of a space defense system, really sort of a satellite surveillance system that will be used to detect missiles and weaponry and military bases and things on the surface of the Earth.
Yes, that's right. It's sort of before the Americans had their Star Wars ideas in terms of missile defense. This is way back in the early 70s. So clearly it was an idea then already. And here is Dr. Jensen, we know, working at this Ministry of Defense installation nearby where these boys are on their Outward Bounds adventure course. So yes, they're putting something up into space. It's all top secret and hush hush, and Dr. Jensen, as you say, is sort of the key to the whole thing. And the bad guys, in the shapes of Mr. Richards, played by the marvelous Milton Johns, and his henchman Kurtz, well, they've got the professor, but they've also got what appears to be brainwashing and some mind control techniques, and they use them not just on Jensen but on several other people in the show. And it seems like they're trying to get or to pry the secrets from Dr. Jensen's mind. But there's also, and as you say, Brian, this gives things away slightly, but there's also the suggestion as the show proceeds towards the end of its 13 episodes that something to do with the launch and the control of this satellite system may rely on a degree of telepathy.
Yes, there are some interesting things going on here that are kind of complex, and the ideas of telepathy and of manipulation and brainwashing of people's minds are quite intense and quite interesting. You get into effectively like a very powerful form of hypnosis that Mr. Richards is doing that affects people's memory and makes them do certain things and in certain ways. So it's very interesting to see what goes on and the sort of viewpoint this show takes on some of these things.
That's right. And we know that he's used this technique on Dr. Jensen, but we also find out that he has used it, obviously, on the instructor, Alex, and that probably explains the period of missing time that he experienced when he was down the caves with Terry. And, of course, Terry himself, we'll find out. He's going to run into trouble himself. But before we get to that, I suppose we should just reflect on, this was 1973, we'd come out of the 60s. Often when we're talking about 60s shows, we're talking about mind control and brainwashing techniques and hypnosis.
Often in a sort of Cold War-related way.
Yeah, that's right. I guess it fits in with that Cold War paranoia that was going on, and this idea that science would be misused to do strange things to our minds and to make us do things we didn't want to. And here it is in this show, the Jensen Code. So interesting, cropping up again in the early 70s.
Yeah, some of those kinds of elements you also get with the space launch and things. A definite influence of this being sort of in the wake of the Apollo era of space launches and moon missions, the idea of how many people would be tuning in on television and watching this, and, you know, a number of the ideas with how space-related technology is seen are really sort of a nice view of that time period and the sort of late Apollo era and what followed it.
Yeah, good point, actually, because they do obviously mention Houston when they're talking about the launch. And as you say, when the launch actually does get ready to happen, clearly everybody in the world is watching. This is a big thing that they're talking about. And here we have this very small corner of the world where Terry appears to have stumbled across a plot, I suppose, to... Well, let's just say to try and use the Jensen Code for other uses than that which it was intended for.
Yes, absolutely. So we should try to put this a little bit in context, in addition to these ideas with the space program and the Cold War and so on, which are certainly fitting in this in a very nice way. Let's put this in context with some of the other television things that were happening in the 70s and at a similar time. There was certainly a lot of interesting and quite classic children's television in the 1970s, and this kind of fits into that.
It does, and it's interesting how much great children's television we've been watching from the 1970s and how much it seems that most of it came from ITV, who were really in a golden age at this time and producing some of these quite dark, scary shows for children. We've talked about many of them already. I'm sure our listeners will remember Time Slip. It's only a couple of shows ago that we were discussing the Doombolt Chase. Another show we've discussed, which interestingly also was originally in colour but only survives in black and white, is Escape Into Night. And then towards the end of the 70s, we've got another couple of shows we've covered. We've got Noah's Castle, and of course we've got the superlative Children of the Stones, which we... Well, I suppose we never tire of mentioning, do we, Brian?
That's right. It's quite a piece, so it's worth mentioning. And those do range from 1970 through to 1980, but certainly a lot of children's television shows that could have quite a strong adventure theme to them, but also could be spooky and scary, and were not afraid to include some things that were a little bit complex and a little bit challenging, but still accessible to children. And that was something really nice they could do in those.
Yes, lots of challenging and thought-provoking television for children at this time. And occasionally we get that we like to discuss, if you like the Jensen Code, what else should you go and watch? So I suppose we've mentioned several of these shows already. Is it up there with the heights of something like Children of the Stones or Time Slip, perhaps, Brian?
I would say it's not quite up with those. I don't think it's as classic as those, but it's certainly very good. And I would put it maybe somewhere in the middle, along with the Doombolt Chase and so on. Certainly an interesting show.
Okay. And as we say, if you like the Jensen Code, if you've watched it as a result of our review and you're looking where to go next, then probably Doombolt Chase is the obvious one. They do have some sort of similar themes set around that classic sort of children's adventure show.
Yes, the Doombolt Chase is shorter, and because of that, I think it's sort of more fast-paced and energetic, but not quite as complex in certain ways. And in case you're thinking that we're running out of these types of shows to cover, there are certainly a number that we have not yet looked at. For example, Sky and Raven and King of the Castle, all things that are available on DVD that we well may get to cover one of these times.
Yes, absolutely. Shows that our listeners are probably familiar with, shows that our listeners certainly have suggested. And yes, as you say, Brian, if they're out on DVD, then stay tuned, because at some point we'll be getting to them.
Very possible,
try,
for sure.
Try, Jensen, try to remember.
Name?
I know your name. Listen to me. I want you to tell me about the messages. The messages, right? It's Saturday. Saturday morning at Mission Control. You're sitting in the receiver booth. You're waiting. Now, 10 seconds to go. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. One more. Come on.
So I guess after discussing where we've got to with the Jensen Code, we probably ought to start thinking about whether we liked it or not and trying to put our thoughts into some sort of order on it. So Brian, with the Jensen Code, what's the good? What stands out to you right from the start?
I really enjoyed a lot of the performances. There were not many performances that were on the weak side, and you had a number of quite good ones there with people like Brian Croucher and Milton Johns and others. You had some sort of creepy characters and some mysterious characters. I really quite enjoyed the performances and the character building we have throughout it.
Yes, we have to say that the cast is terrific, really, right the way throughout. I can't think of too many sort of like duff performances. We've got some great bad guys. Milton Johns does always does a splendid turn. He's very good. I think David Bradley as the lead is very believable. Likewise, the other sort of boys in the bunkhouse, we don't see too much of them. And I suspect they're all played by actors who are somewhat older than the age they're playing, but they're all pretty good. And then right there, we even get, you know, minor roles. There's a character called Mr. Buckle, who sort of is the caretaker at the bunkhouse. He's very good. And then even when we get a doctor, and here he is played by Jeffrey Beavers, who, as you say, Brian, we know perhaps better for his incarnation of the Master. So all in all, a terrific cast, really.
Yes, I think so. And I like the fact, staying with the characters, that there are a number of characters that seem like they could be sort of minor throwaway characters like Mr. Buckle, who become much more central as it goes on, and you sort of learn that there really is something quite substantive and important about these characters rather than just someone who was there in passing, as it seemed at the beginning.
Yes, lots of characters are allowed to develop and to show us different sides of themselves, and you know, it's clear that Milton Johns and his henchman Kurtz are bad guys from the outset, but the other bad guys are sort of revealed as the show progresses. And we won't give them away, but it's good stuff.
Yes. I enjoyed some of the ideas and the way that it slowly rolls out its ideas in this. In particular, the way that Mr. Richards is manipulating people with this hypnosis of a sort, and there is a lot of manipulation of memory, which is a little scary, actually, and very interesting how that was treated. It was done very well, and that was something that I particularly appreciated in this.
Yes, that is good. And the way, you know, by and large, the writing and the way the plot is developed is pretty good. And certainly the mind control stuff, the hypnosis, the brainwashing, that works well. It's quite scary and intense, particularly when Terry falls into the hands of Mr. Richards and Kurtz himself. I have to say, I was slightly puzzled when the telepathy and also the suggestion of telekinesis came into it. It seemed like that was just thrown in and perhaps not fully explained as to how that was going to be involved. I felt personally happier when we were just with the brainwashing techniques, but there you go.
Yeah, it was sort of meant to be tied with the ideas that the telepathy and the brainwashing were sort of related to each other. But it was a little bit strange to have it just sort of show up there and, oh, we've just acknowledged that telepathy and mind reading are real and part of this. And it was a little bit out of context, but not too bad in the scope of things, I would say.
Okay. As ever, we like to comment on the look and feel and sound of the production. Brian, what did you think?
I thought it was quite well done. The direction was good. The caving scenes were especially strong, where they used this location for the caves, and it looked very good. Other locations and sets were solid, generally looked quite good. So I thought the look was pretty good.
Yes, it does all look very good. As you say, the location work is fantastic. And there's a cave rescue towards the end of the 13 episodes where we have two actors rescuing another actor. And maybe it wasn't as scary and as dangerous as it looked, but it certainly looked quite daunting. And so that was very well done. They did very well with their choice of locations and with however it was achieved, getting the lighting technicians and the sound technicians and all those cables down into the caves in order to film there.
Yeah, some of it looked quite small and claustrophobic, and some of it looked sort of very... very much like you were in places that were hard to get to, so it certainly looked good.
So we've been watching this in black and white because the original color recordings don't survive. Now, sometimes when we do that, we found that it helps the program, and I'm thinking of the sort of spooky, nightmarish Escape into Night. Other times it doesn't have much impact on our viewing. I've had a look at the colour episode 6, so I can tell you that it doesn't seem to make a great deal of difference on this show, although perhaps, as we've just said, those sequences down the caves might be more creepy in black and white, I suppose, Brian.
Yes, it's hard to say on this one, but I think this one would work reasonably well in either way. It would be nice to be able to see the whole thing in color, of course. But it works perfectly reasonably in black and white, I think.
Now, we've got another interesting feature with this show, which, as you said, Brian, is the first-person voiceover narration from Terry, not one that I can remember us encountering much before. And I always wonder when we've got a voiceover narration whether it's a problem with the storytelling, that they have to tell us extra details rather than showing us. Did you feel that was an issue here?
I didn't think it was a problem because I liked the performance in those voiceovers. I thought they were some of Di Bradley's best performance in this serial because they were full of tension. So I thought they were okay. I sort of enjoyed them. It was sort of an interesting perspective and sort of emphasized the idea of him being very much out on his own.
Okay, I mean, you make a good point, actually, that he is on his own for a lot of this show, running around investigating things by himself, getting into trouble, and so on. So yes, I suppose in that sense, the voiceover does make sense. It gives us sort of privy to his internal thoughts, and it's an interesting element. It's, as we say, it's not one that we come across very often on British Invaders.
That's right. I think in this case, it fills in some of the gaps where otherwise you wouldn't have anyone speaking, and sort of gives us something a little bit interesting there, and adds to some of the tension and some of the emotion. It didn't seem like much of a storytelling crutch to me in this case.
Okay. It is perhaps one of the longer ones. I mean, it's 13 episodes it takes to tell the story. Could that have been compressed down, or were you happy with the length?
I would say that it was a little bit long. I would have liked to see it not down to 4 or 6 episodes, but down to maybe 8 or 10 episodes or something. It took a little longer to get into things in the first few episodes and sort of figure out where things are going. So it could have been a little shorter, but it still very much worked in this 13-episode format.
Okay, yeah, I think I would agree. I mean, a 10 episode would seem about right for this. So it is slightly padded out in places, and in particular, I guess some of the good guys take quite a while to figure out what's going on. But there you go. On the other hand, you know, we don't often see shows being given that long to develop a story these days, certainly not on children's television. So interesting. It's given time to run anyway.
Yes, it did allow for them to do some interesting things along the way, so that was nice.
Okay. I should just mention, as ever, I put out a call on Facebook for any comments, and Gordon, as ever, helpfully pointed out that he'd seen the show and that he thought it was a very solid and entertaining piece of children's television. So thanks for that, Gordon, and as ever, thanks for the contributions on the Facebook group.
Yes, absolutely. So we should get down to our recommendations. Is this one you should take a look at? Eamon, what do you think?
I think it is, as Gordon says, I think it is a solid show. I think it's well done. I think its greatest moments are perhaps when it's down in the caves, which are quite sort of creepy and scary in places. We've mentioned some terrific performances in there, particularly Milton Johns, who stands out for me. So I would say I'm going to give this one a cautious thumbs up from me, that if you can get hold of the DVD and if you like that sort of 70s classic adventure stuff on children's television, then I'm going to say yes, a cautious yes, I think. Brian, what about yourself?
I'm going to be pretty close to that. It's a good show. I think it's definitely worth watching. And you do have to realize that it is a little bit slow in its pacing. And of course, it's black and white. And it's definitely of its time. But if you're okay with those things, it's a strong show. It's really quite good. With, as you say, lots of performances. I would say the strongest moments were not when it's in the caves, but when it's dealing with the hypnosis and brainwashing and memory issues. Although the cave related things are certainly very good as well. So there's lots of good stuff in here. So I would say, yeah, this gets a recommendation from me. It's good stuff.
Okay, and as ever, if you've seen The Jensen Code, if you remember it when it was in colour, or if you go ahead and watch it having heard our reviews, we'd be delighted to have your feedback. Tell us if you agree or disagree with us. Please jump in on the Facebook page or via the webpage or through the email.
Yes, absolutely. So, in summary, The Jensen Code was a 1970s children's TV story that focused on a young person called Terry, who is at this outdoor adventure type of camp and learns that there are strange things going on near and maybe even in this series of caves that they're going into and caving in. And we learn about the activities that are going on at a nearby Ministry of Defense facility that are connected to a major space launch that is coming. And we learn that there is a group of people who appear to be involved in kidnappings and seeking to get some information about this space launch and things that are involved that they can use. And this is where we get to the idea of the Jensen Code, and also where we get into some ideas of telepathy and lots of ideas of brainwashing and hypnosis and the manipulation of memory.
Okay, fascinating stuff. And, of course, please come back and join us next time when we'll try not to manipulate your emotions or your memory too much. But we're going back to the 90s, to those wilderness years of science fiction on British television. And we're going to talk about a show that might be somewhat poorly remembered, but we're going to try and bring it back and talk about a show called The Uninvited, an ITV show from the 90s. So some interesting stuff to talk about next time, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there. We also have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us and lots of good discussions with our listeners there.
You can also find us and lots of similarly geek-themed shows on vognetwork.com. That's the voice of geeks streaming internet radio. British Invaders is on a Monday and Tuesday night schedule, but you'll find several other shows. And as ever, if you've joined us from vognetwork.com, we welcome you aboard.
Yes, lots of good stuff happening there, for sure. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us, and until next time, it's Eamon in England saying dash dot 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 dash dot dash dash dot.